even in these slums, what we found was a very sharp difference between what the slum dwellers wanted, things like sanitation and garbage cleaning, and what spending happened, which was roads.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Does the threat of having a political record published in a newspaper change the amount that politicians will spend to help the people who vote for them? An experiment in Delhi slums provides strong evidence of the power of the press. And Rohini Pandey of Yale is one of the researchers. Rohini, welcome back.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be on.
Now, you investigated the politicians who represent people who live in Delhi, in the slums of Delhi. What sort of things do these people say would help the most, the sort of public spending that could really improve their lives?
So, Tim, when we started on this project, one of the first things we did was quite a large baseline survey of slum dwellers to get a sense of their spending preferences. And the issue that came out very clearly in it is that what they care a lot about is the public goods in the neighborhoods where they live. So one thing you have to think about the slums is not only do the people living there have uncertain property rights, a defining feature of a slum is very often that administrative structures can't invest directly resources in, say, people's houses and providing, say, you know, piped water or toilets because they don't have defined property rights. So these are areas where the citizens care a lot about the quality of the public toilets or the drainage system because they're very reliant on these public goods. And so unsurprisingly, what we found is a very strong interest in sanitation and cleaning up of garbage and, say, provision of clean water. Not much interest in something that politicians the world over like to spend on, which is roads. I'd also say that a few of the items that the slum dwellers cared a lot about, especially water, has been privatized in Delhi. So even if they cared a lot about it, they couldn't directly ask the councillors to help them beyond lobbying. But certainly on issues like drainage or quality of public toilets, the councillors both had an ability to invest discretionary funds that they had in those resources. And also they controlled the contracts of, say, the public toilet providers.
So imagine I'm a councillor in a municipal corporation of Delhi, which I think these are the politicians that you investigated. And I represent a deprived part of Delhi, one of these slums. I do have the power to make some of the improvements that they want. But from your research, is that how I have allocated my budget in the past?
Let me first start with your first part. So what can a councillor do? So Delhi is actually a very strange setting because it's the capital of India. So a lot of people care about what's happening there. It's also got a state government. And it's then got this city government, which is the councillors. And so they each have powers and they're kind of confusing to identify. But certainly what city councillors can do is they each get a discretionary fund that they can spend in the ward they're elected from. They have to allocate the resources, which will then be administered by the city bureaucracy. So they can say, I want to give, let's say, $100 to improve a public toilet, and then the administration will do it. So they can't directly hire a private contractor to come in and do it, but they can allocate the resources. For some other cases, they sit on the committees that choose the private contractor. So public toilets in slums are usually meant to be provided by a private contractor, but certainly they can choose who to give the contract to and then have some power in lobbying it. So I'd say the two kind of powers they have is they can directly allocate their discretionary funds and then they can sit on committees from where they can control who is chosen as a provider if there's any kind of public-private relationship.
And am I directing my attention in the way that the poor would like me to?
I guess the way to think of the question is, am I directing my attention as a politician where maybe the majority of my ward or my citizens' preferences lie? So one choice we had to make up front is really decide which group of citizens do we want to focus on because they may have differing preferences. We decided up front that we were going to survey and pay particular attention to wards where there was a relatively high propensity of slum incidents.
Yeah.
And so therefore slum dwellers made up a reasonably large fraction of the population. But even in these slums, what we found was a very sharp difference between what the slum dwellers wanted, which I mentioned earlier, were things like sanitation and garbage cleaning, and what spending happened, which was roads. And then another category where slum dwellers really did not have much preferences for, but you saw quite a lot of spending by councillors, was on things like parks. And you might think that for people in slums, parks shouldn't matter because outdoor space is a premium. Mm-hmm. But I think it really is a case that these parks and greenery were seen much more as a middle class benefit than it was for them.
Now, your experiment was to inform some of the councillors that their record on spending in office would get public exposure. So how do you deliver I suppose you could call it a threat to me and my fellow councillors?
The way we did that was we worked with a great NGO who had developed a reputation for using the right to information in India, India's Freedom of Information Act, to first get information on how elected politicians had spent their resources, and then to create performance report cards and publish them in newspapers. So what was important for us is that we were working with an NGO that had already a reputation for credibly doing this using administrative data, official data that couldn't be questioned, and publishing it in well-known newspapers. So 2 years before the election, we worked with this NGO, and to a random sample of councillors, they sent a letter saying that this is what we do, and this is to inform you that just before the next election, so 2 years in the future, we will be publishing report cards on you. And the reason we did that well in advance is because what we were really interested in understanding was whether information can act as an incentive. So is the fact that you know that your performance will be informed about in a reasonably long time frame affect how you spend your resources in the period running up to it?
And because of the track record of this NGO, then I would believe that that threat was credible.
Both. So it was the track record of the NGO. And the second thing I was going to say is that we had on board as the partner a very large daily newspaper, which at the time of our intervention was the second largest newspaper in Delhi. And we were working with their Hindi edition, so the vernacular edition, which is the most relevant one for slum dwellers.
Do those slum dwellers read this newspaper? They believe what's in this newspaper?
So it's an interesting question of how we think the channel of influence works. At that time, this was 2010. Now, the world of social media may be very different. Certainly at that time, that was an important source. But I think what's important is a very credible source. And it's not just that individuals directly read it, but just before elections, these can become very useful campaign tools either way, you know, for political parties who want to say, look, my candidate's done well, or for political parties and candidates who want to say, look, the incumbent has done terribly, you shouldn't vote for him or her.
So we had 2 years before the election. Did it change the amount of pro-poor spending that councillors did?
Yes, it did. And this effect was concentrated, as I suggested, in areas where there were more slums. We had done a survey just before we sent out the letters, identifying what the preferences of the slum dwellers were. We used that information together with information on spending to create an index of what we call pro-poor spending, which is how much of the spending went towards goods that slum dwellers had stated were relatively areas of preference for them. And given that, what we see is a move in that direction, which is concentrated in wards with high slum incidents. We don't see a similar move in other areas. And that's consistent with the fact that politicians will react in terms of this only if they believe these slum dwellers are a significant voting population.
Now, I'm a councillor and I changed the way that I spent my money. Do you know that I did this because I was frightened or I was very motivated by the public information that would be published about me? What do you think it might have been that I was inspired to go and find out a little bit more about what slum dwellers wanted and responded to it in that way? Could there possibly have been a positive motivation there?
So that's a great question, because certainly when we did this, you could imagine that you just get primed by the fact that there's going to be this information that you go out and get it. So precisely because we wanted to distinguish this incentive effect of information from a pure priming or counselor information effect, we actually ran a cross-cutting experiment where what we did is we provided counselors with private information about the quality of toilets and garbage points in slums in their wards. And we provided them quite detailed maps where say, the information on where the toilets were placed, where the garbage points are placed, and their quality, so that they could actually have reacted to that if they wanted to. So that was precisely to answer this question of, if we see a similar responsiveness of councillors to privately getting information, that tells us that some of the problem in the setting is just even they don't know what's going on in the slums. However, we didn't find an impact. We find that despite giving them significant information, we don't see an effect of them actually spending more in areas that they knew or they were informed were had problems.
Now, the constituents got a benefit from more pro-poor spending, but did the newly pro-poor councillors also get a benefit? Did they win more votes in the election afterwards?
The answer is yes, but it's actually more nuanced when you look at the details. So in general, what you find in Delhi, as in many other places, that there is typically quite a strong incumbency advantage. So what happened before this election was that the government announced that they were going to very significantly expand the gender quotas. And so half the wards in the city were going to be reserved for women. What this meant that roughly a third of the incumbent councillors who were male were not able to stand from their home ward because they had been reserved for women. So they obviously tended to approach their party asking them to place them from another ward. And interestingly, what we find is that this is the group where the effects of the treatment are concentrated. So specifically, if you were a counsellor who was treated by the report cards and you had responded by increasing your pro-poor spending quite a lot, then the party was more willing to give you a ticket to stand from a different high slum ward. So it doesn't seem that, at least on average, we don't see an effect among the groups that were just able to stand from their own ward. I think there it does seem like incumbency advantage matters a lot. But those who were forced to leave their party, their seat, did benefit. Interestingly, what we then find is that those individuals benefit in terms of they're more likely to win. But importantly, the party actually benefits from reputational effects, even in the home ward of the incumbent, when the incumbent was not able to stand. So it does seem like, and I think this was one of the things we learned in this paper, is that it's important to recognize the role that political parties are playing as an institution. They are doing quite a lot of vetting of candidates, and I think the good news is that they seem to care about performance, possibly because I think voters do, but you know, even irrespective of how much they did, the fact that parties care about it matters.
Yes, you can't always make the assumption, can you? Now, we've covered voting in Indian elections before. One of the things that we did cover on Vox Talks is how many voters choose a candidate because of corruption, bribery, or because of that candidate's ethnic background. How much influence did these factors have in your data?
I think we kind of had tied our hands a little bit in terms of we had said that we wanted to look at these effects of information. And as you can imagine, things like ethnic background or corruption is not something that is randomly attributed. So we didn't look at its effect. But from previous work I've done, I would say that certainly ethnic identity matters, but there's quite a lot of space to move electoral outcomes if voters are informed on performance. And certainly even in our data, when we asked citizens at the baseline what they cared about, their number one response, you know, caveated by the fact that maybe social desirability bias plays a role here, was to say candidate performance.
Now, finally, Rohini, does this experiment give you pleasure? Because it was a success. You made more politicians more responsive to voters. Or does it make you sad because it doesn't seem that they were any more ethical? They were just pragmatic about this.
I'm very willing to be happy if people are pragmatic because I think then we know how to act on them.
Yes.
I think the thing that made me the happiest was actually to see that institutions seem to work, that political parties are internalizing the process. I think we are often very cynical about the role that political parties play in lower income settings. And so I think that was probably the part that made me the happiest.
Rohini, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be on.
Now, you want to read about this? The paper is called Public Information is an Incentive for Politicians, Experimental Evidence from Delhi Elections. And the authors are Abhijit Banerjee, Niels Enevoldsen, Rohini Pandey, and Michael Walton. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And all our past episodes, as ever, are at voxdev.org.